Desai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Sai's glory, his divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Loving salutations at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba, the love of our lives, the wind beneath our wings, the beat of our hearts, the rhythm of the universe, and the current that keeps it in motion, alive to the minutest atom. Beloved and beautiful Bhagwan, you are also the voice, the ears, the heart and soul of Radio Sai, and we pray to you to please always remain so. Sweetest Swami, for us, you are all that, as in Tat, that ever matters and ever will. To your glory, with all our love and humility, we bow over and over again. Sai Ram, dear listeners, good morning and welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. You're tuned to our Asia stream coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, Andhra Pradesh, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. My name is Karuna and I thank you for your company on this beautiful Thursday morning, June the 22nd, 2017. The time in the ashram right now is nearly 9:40, a few seconds short, a.m., Indian Standard Time. And the current weather conditions in Prashanthi Nilayam continue to be easy, breezy, pleasant and pleasing and just about perfect. The sweltering heat is all gone now and we have daytime highs in the early to mid-30s and overnight temperatures are barely in early 20s and that is in Celsius. Accompanied by a gentle breeze and frequent spurts of monsoon showers in the afternoons, Patti is the place to be if you wish to enjoy a good night's sleep this time of the year in India. And while we're enjoying life in our slice of heaven, we pray for the millions braving the sweltering heat in north of India and elsewhere. Today on Morning Glory, we have lined up for you part two of Tryst with Divinity with Mr. Abhimanyu Kaul. First of all, let me thank everyone who sent in their feedback to last week's episode of this interview. Today, dear listeners, you can enjoy its conclusion, which promises to be gripping. But first, I have a treat for your ears and some serious spiritual nourishment for your soul. You may recall that Mr. K. Chakravarti, a long-standing devotee of Bhagwan Baba and a member of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust, had recorded a series of self-reflections with us, a total of 10 episodes. Well, recently, we thoroughly enjoyed recording yet another episode, that is episode number 11, which proved to be deeply moving and emotional, both for Mr. Chakravarti and for us at Radio Sai. In it, he expressed himself through the medium of fluid poetry and exquisite prose. His content is magical and electric and speaks directly to the heart, especially in light of the Mahasamadhi. Entitled, His Presence, Silent Deep. This self-reflection by Mr. K. Chakravarti is worth sitting down and listening to with rapt attention, as it comes straight from the heart of a person who dedicated his entire adult life in the servitude of his master, and he continues to do so every single day. This episode of self-reflection by Mr. Chakravarti will be followed by Tryst with Divinity with Abhimanyu Kaul. So please take a listen to His Presence, Silent Deep by Mr. Chakravarti. This is episode number 11 in the series.
His Presence, Silent Deep. Prayerful salutations at the lotus feet of Bhagwan. Esteemed Vice Chancellor, respected Director and members of the faculty, and my dear students. Thank you all very much for the kind invitation you have extended to me to be with you on this day, which is being cherished by you all as the anniversary of the first visit of Bhagwan on Guru Purnima Day in 1972. Years have rolled by, but the newness of the first visit to Bhagwan is refreshed in our memories year after year. I had first visited the campus in 1975 as Bhagwan had come here, and I was then collector of this district. My wife and I have fresh and green memories of our first visit, and we were the recipients of Bhagwan's gracious hospitality. Later in 1981, I had become the first registrar of Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning at Deemed University. Little did I know that 6 years after the first visit to the campus, I'll have a role to play in the growth and well-being of the campus. We cannot foresee many things in life. As we accumulate years in our life, we realize that there is a destiny that shapes our ends. Of course, I found my coming to Bhagwan in be associated with this university was a sweet part of that destiny. I must say, however, that it has been a long, sweet destiny being in the presence and the shadow of the great phenomenon. I was half my age when I had the first blessings of Swami. Prior to that knowledge of His presence, I was quite frankly a stranger. However, it is well known that there are no strangers to God. In my first meeting or interview by Bhagwan, as it was popularly known at Prashanti Nilayam, Bhagwan Himself told me, "I may be a stranger to you, but you are not a stranger to me." The last 4 decades have been spent in the physical and ethereal presence of Swami. For about 13 years after I came to settle down at Prashanti Nilayam, I had the good fortune of being an active participant in the growth of Swami's university. The early years of this university's life, Swami, as a chancellor, had given considerable time guiding its growth. He took a keen interest in the formulation and finalization of the syllabus of various courses. He attended the meetings with the Academic Council and the governing body, and even the selection committee meetings for selection of readers and professors. He was also keen to know the results of the entrance test for admission to various courses. The Vice Chancellor and I usually finalized the admission to various courses after securing the formal approval and blessings of the Chancellor. Later, after leaving the university, I had the good fortune of being blessed by Swami with the opportunity of executing the comprehensive drinking water supply scheme in Anantapur district, and still later was blessed with the responsibility of being secretary of Bhagwan's Sri Satya Sai Central Trust till Mahasamadhi. All these years have left me with immense joy in doing His work, and I feel that such service has removed the barrier between the world and God. It has left me with the sense of having been part of the flow of universal life. As the mystic poet Sri Aurobindo says, "All mind was a single harp of many strings, all life a song of many meeting lives, and all these years a rapture of beatific energies." All through these years at the lotus feet of Swami, I felt like being in a state of spontaneous servitude. The flow of time during the last 4 decades was like eternity's transparent robe. Life was a puzzle of fascinating events, a coiled perspective of developing scenes. The years that I have spent in the university and beyond gave me continuous opportunity to listen to Swami's discourses that have been published under the title Satya Sai Speaks. These discourses, individually and in totality, have enabled me to look at life as a great benediction. Swami's discourses have also enabled me to understand that ordinary persons like me can have their lives suffused with spirituality which inform the mind and soul. The ideas that have been only intellectually pursued until then had taken a reality of their own. The time I had spent in Swami's service has also enabled me to study and learn more in the subjects of my interest, in spite of a busy schedule, on a daily basis, carrying out instructions of Bhagavan. There is a time to read inspiring books. Books like Sri Aurobindo's Savitri made a huge impact. I started reading it after Professor V.K. Gokart, the then Vice Chancellor, with whom I worked in the early years of the university, suggested that I read it. I found it an extraordinarily exhilarating study then, and even now I find it uplifting and elevating. I would heartily recommend the study of Savitri to you all. The first reading, of course, will be heavy and difficult, but subsequent readings are bound to transport you to a different level as you start understanding the full import. The whole book is truly inspirational. As he himself put it, Savitri is a poetic philosophy of spirit. He remarks, "If I have to write for the general reader, I could not have written Savitri at all. It is for myself that I have written it, and for those who can lend themselves on the subject matter, the images and techniques of mystic poetry, much profound in its substance. There are many passages which fill us with pure delight and fresh understanding of the nature of life. I'll read out certain lines, and when you hear them, you will find yourself transported to a plane beyond the one which you normally traverse." Quote, "This world was not built with random bricks of chance. A blind god is not destiny's architect. A conscious power has drawn the plan of life. There is a meaning in each curve and time. It's an architecture high and grand, by many named and nameless masons built, in which unseeing hands obey the unseen." Does it not pose a counterpoint to the modern evolutionary theorist? When you read the daily horror of wars which uproot vast numbers of people from their homes, you wonder what this world is all about. When I read the following lines of Sri Aurobindo, I find that he gives us a clue as to how we should perceive the true nature of the world. Quote, "This great, perplexed and discontented world, this haunt of ignorance, this home of pain, there are pitched desires tense, grief's headquarters, a vast disguise conceals the eternal's bliss." The last line leaves us with a desire to pierce the disguise. There are times when we find that life is cast in a Kafkaesque mold. Listen to the following lines. "He builds on a mighty vacancy of soul, a huge philosophy of nothingness." Bhagavan has told us that if we fashion our lives according to what he teaches, we will grow to reach the heights of humanity. The following lines of Sri Aurobindo poetically convey the teaching. "If human will could be made one with God's, if human thoughts could echo the thoughts of God, man might be all-knowing and omnipotent." At times, we may be overcome by a sense of tiredness and weakness. We may despair as to where from we have come and where we go to. Sri Aurobindo puts it graphically, "All rose from the silence, all goes back to its hush." Sometimes we wonder whether we'll be better off knowing our future, and we do seek the help of an astrologer or a palmist. But listen to Sri Aurobindo. Quote, "A future knowledge is an added pain, a torturing burden, and a fruitless light on the enormous scene that fate has built." There is an inescapable duality in the world, but still, it is in this duality that we find unity with God. We have to reach a stage which Swami calls Dvandvatita. The following lines are so powerful as to draw us out of the duality. Quote, "Our destiny is written in double terms. Through nature's contraries, we draw near God. Out of the darkness, we still grow to light. Death is our road to immortality." Swami has told us often that life should not be self-centric. It should be other-centric and God-centric. And see how Sri Aurobindo puts it. "None was apart and none lives for himself alone. Each lived for God in him and God in all. Each soulless inexpressibly held the whole." Sri Aurobindo dramatizes the meeting of Savitri and Satyavan. Hear him. Quote, "They wondered at each other and rejoiced, and wove affinity in a silent gaze. A moment passed that was eternity's ray, an hour began the matrix of new time." That was how a moment of time became a moment in time, and time was made in that moment, as T.S. Eliot would put it. After Mahasamadhi, I recall the following lines from Savitri. Quote, "I caught the echoes of a word supreme, and metered the rhythm beats of infinity, and listened to the music for the eternal voice. I felt a covered touch, I heard a call, but could not clasp the body of my God, or hold within my hands the world mother's feet." It's our experience that although we work hard, we do not get the reward as expected. We often hear that we should do the work and leave the rest to God. Sri Aurobindo captures the troubled feelings poignantly in the following lines. "Moveless there stands a high unchanging will. To its omnipotence leave thy work's result. And then comes the overarching assurance. All things shall change in God's transfiguring hour." Imagine a tired body forced to work, and then tune your ears to the overpowering lines. Quote, "A foiled immortal soul in perishing limb, baffled and beaten back, we labor still. Annulled, frustrated, spent, we still survive. We are aware that things come and go. We see how work of people take shape, how they endure and get lost too. However, it is necessary to develop the ability to see eternity in transience and shape ourselves to a higher end." Listen how Sri Aurobindo picturizes it. Quote, "In the endless moment of eternity, he saw from timelessness the works of time." Swami has talked to us about unity in plurality. Listen once again to the illuminating lines of Aurobindo. Quote, "All mind was a single heart of many strings. All life a song of many beating lives. For worlds were many, but the self was one." We also read that when we realize ourselves, the world around us falls away. But the poetry of Sri Aurobindo is so powerful, and I quote again, "I lived in the ray, but faced not to the sun. I looked upon the world and missed the self. And when I found the self, I lost the world." We also have moments when we feel that life has not been smooth and that we wish it had been less painful. We have heard that many people have gone through difficult times having undergone pain and suffering. The following lines from Sri Aurobindo are sure to move us to bear with pain if the outcome is going to be favorable. Quote, "Pain is the hand of nature sculpturing men to greatness. An inspired labor chisels with heavenly cruelty and unwilling mold. The fleeting nature of our emotions is beautifully captured in the following lines of his. Quote, "Our emotions are but high and dying notes. Our joys are perfumes in a brittle vase." We have heard from Swami that we are endowed with a sense of discrimination and that choice is always with us. The following lines you will find to be moving and inspiring. Quote, "To choose his path among the many paths is given him. For each his difficult goal hewn out of infinite possibility." We have heard people talking about Purusha and Prakriti. See how Sri Aurobindo renders it. Quote, "In him, soul and nature, equal presences, balance and fuse in a wide harmony." I'm sure you all would have read and heard about the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. The description of his crucifixion by Sri Aurobindo is heart-wrenching and sublime. Allow me to quote the following lines from the mystic poet because they have often shaken me to the bones. Quote, "The Son of God, born as a son of man, has drunk the bitter cup, own God's debt, the debt, the eternal woes to the fallen kind. His will has bound to death and struggling life, that earns in vain for rest and endless peace. Now is the debt paid, wiped off the original score. The eternal suffers in human form. He has signed salvation's testament with his blood. He has opened the doors of his undying peace. The deity compensates the creature's claim. The creator bears the law of pain and death. A retribution smites the incarnate God. His love has paved the mortal's road to heaven. He has given his life and light to balance here the dark account of mortal ignorance. It is finished. The dread mysterious sacrifice offered by God's martyred body for the world. Gethsemane and Calvary are his lot. He carries the cross on which man's soul is nailed. His escort is the curses of the crowd. Insult and jeer are his rights acknowledgement. Two thieves slain with him mock his mighty death. He has trod with bleeding brow the Savior's way. He who has found his identity with God pays with the body's death his soul's vast light." Truly an amazing and powerful narration of the cataclysmic and tectonic moment in history and etched in human psyche for all time to come. And these lines have made an impact on me far beyond any description, and association with Bhagwan has invested these lines with a sense of immediacy and poignancy for me. And that's why I thought I should share my reading of these lines in the long quote. I have quoted Sri Aurobindo at length. I'll move on now to quote another famous poet, Milton. My reading of Milton's Paradise Lost and Paradise Regained has been greatly influenced by Bhagwan's physical presence in our midst. God was the incomprehensible one beyond the reach of ordinary human beings. Such a one in my mind and imagination burst forth in my life and gave to a nondescript life a new meaning, a new vigor, a new purpose. I was always moved by the sweep and majesty of Milton's epic poem. As I read, I was given to understand that the power of Satan was magnified in order to convey the truth that such a powerful rebel in God's kingdom was like a straw before the might of God. Recall the lines of Milton. Him, the almighty power, hurled headlong flaming from the ethereal sky, with hideous ruin and combustion down to bottomless perdition, there to dwell in adamantine chains and penal fire. But having spent time in the presence of Bhagwan, it was the forgiveness of the Lord rather than the power of God that moved me. Refer to the lines of Milton again, when Michael was sent by God to Adam after he brought upon himself the fall. Quote, "To whom thus Michael with regard benign, Adam, thou knowest heaven his, and all the earth. Not this rock only, his omnipresence fills land, sea, and air, and every kind that lives. All the earth he gave thee to possess and rule, no despicable gift. Yet doubt not, but in valley and plain, God is as here, and will be found alike present, and of his presence many a sign still following thee, still compassing thee round with goodness and paternal love." There's another great poet, Khalil Gibran, whose evocative language in the book that Jesus, the Son of Man, has appealed to me because there are certain passages I find as though they refer to Bhagwan himself. Here are the following lines. Quote, "Great events always seem alien to our daily lives, though their nature may be rooted in our nature. But though they appear as sudden in their passing, their time span is for years and for generations." Jesus of Nazareth was himself the great event. That man, whose father and mother and brothers we know, was himself a miracle wrought in Judea. Yes, all his own miracles, if placed at his feet, would not rise to the height of his ankles. And all the rivers of all the years shall not carry away our remembrance of him. He was a mountain burning in the night, yet he was a soft glow upon the hills. He was a tempest in the sky, yet he was a murmur in the midst of daybreak. He was a torrent pouring from the heights to the plains to destroy all things in its path. And he was like the laughter of the children. And now, the changing seasons of the world, not yet ours, shall not erase his loveliness from this, our world. No, Jesus was not a phantom, nor a conception of the poets. He was man, like yourself and myself, but only to sight and touch and hearing. In all other ways, he was unlike us. He would make merry with his listeners. He would tell jests and play upon the words and laugh with all the fullness of his heart. Did it not appear to you that the earth was stilled on that dark Friday and the heavens were at war with the heavens? And felt you not when his face disappeared from our sight as if we were not but memories in the mist? We have listened to Bhagwan in rapturous silence when he spoke to us. Hear what Khalil Gibran talks about Jesus Christ. "When Jesus spoke, the whole world was hushed to listen. His speech was simple and joyous, and the sound of his voice was like cool water in a land of drought. To tell of the speech of Jesus, one must needs have his speech or the echo thereof. I beg you to forgive me for beginning a story that I cannot end. But the end is not yet upon my lips. It is still a love song in the wind." We have also been transported to another world when Bhagwan sang. That was the feeling which is caught by Khalil Gibran about Jesus. Quote, "He was a poet whose heart dwelt in a power beyond the heights, and his songs, though sung for our ears, were sung for others' ears also, and to men in another land, where life is forever young and time is always dawn. Yet another passage in Khalil Gibran's Jesus the Son of Man moves me to the core of my being. I am taken in by the softness of the words and the delicate balance in the narrative of Khalil Gibran regarding Jesus Christ. Quote, "He is one born here in this land, but we have conceived him in our longing. From the beginning of years, he is of all tribes and yet of none. He shall conquer by the word of his mouth and by the flame of his spirit. I am old and alone, yet still he visits my dreams. He comes like a white angel with pinions, and with his grace he hushes my dread of darkness. The most that I possess is the warmth of the sun and the memory of that man. We shall pass with the flowing of the rivers, and we shall be nameless. But those who crossed him in midstream shall be remembered for crossing him in midstream. We have also felt in our being the slow but steady change as we groan with Bhagwan." It is worthwhile quoting the entire narrative by Khalil Gibran through the person of John at Patmos. It's an extended quotation. I'll still do it. "His mind sought and held other minds, and his complete spirit visited other spirits. And in so doing, his spirit changed these minds and these spirits. On a day when he and I were alone, walking in a field, we were both hungry, and we came to a wild apple tree. There were only two apples hanging on the bough, and he held the trunk of the tree with his arm and shook it, and the two apples fell down. He picked them both up and gave one to me. The other he held in his hand. In my hunger, I ate the apple, and I ate it fast. Then I looked at him, and I saw that he still held the other apple in his hand. And he gave it to me, saying, 'Eat this also.' And I took the apple, and in my shameless hunger, I ate it. And as we walked on, I looked upon his face. But how shall I tell you of what I saw? A night where candles burn in space, a noon where all shepherds are at peace and happy that their flocks are grazing, an eventide and a stillness and a homecoming. Then a sleep and a dream. All these things I saw in his face. He had given me the two apples. And I knew he was hungry, even as I was hungry. But I now know that in giving them to me, he had been satisfied. He himself ate of other fruit from another tree. I will tell you more of him, but how shall I? When love becomes vast, love becomes wordless. And when memory is overladen, it seeks a silent deep. In conclusion, I'd like to fall back on the soul-fulfilling lines of Sri Aurobindo to tell you what Bhagwan means to us. Quote, "We have looked upon the face of God. Our life has opened with divinity. We have borne identity with the Supreme and known His meaning in our mortal lives. Our love has grown greater by that mighty touch and learnt its heavenly significance. Thank you.
Sai Ram, and welcome back to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. We are coming to you from live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, on this 22nd of June 2017. The time in the ashram right now is 13 minutes past 10 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time. You just heard His Presence, Silent Deep, a self-reflection by Mr. K. Chakravarti. This was episode number 11 in the series. This lecture by Mr. Chakravarti was delivered at the Anandpur campus of the Sai University on the occasion of his anniversary celebrations a few years ago, most likely in 2011. Dear listeners, we look forward to your comments, suggestions and feedbacks on this presentation from Radio Sai. You can reach us by email at listener@radiosai.org. And now I have lined up the conclusion of the two-part Tryst with Divinity with Mr. Abhimanyu Kaul. He is in conversation with my colleague, Mr. Bishu Prushti. As I leave you to enjoy this episode, it's now time for me to bid you Sai Ram and wish you a Sai some awesome day ahead. May all that you do, think and speak be inspired by our beloved Bhagwan. May He hold your hand all the way, step by step, through this day, so that everything that you and I do is worthy of being offered at His lotus feet. And before I hand you over to Bishu and Abhi, there is a quote of mine, one of my many favorite quotes from Tagore, which I strongly feel inspired to share with all of you this morning, for it means a lot to me personally. Here it goes. When, because you know today is a day of great poetry, we heard such sublime poetry from Mr. Chakravarti, so I want to just add my 2 cents worth. It's not half as profound, my ability with words, but Tagore is eloquent, so I'll take the liberty of quoting him. He says, "When thou commandest me to sing, it seems that my heart would break with pride, and I look at thy face and tears come to my eyes. All that is harsh and dissonant in my life melts into one sweet harmony, and my adoration spreads wings like a glad bird on its flight across the sea. I know thou takest pleasure in my singing. I know that only as a singer I come before thy presence. I touch by the edge of the far-spreading wing of my song thy feet, which I could never aspire to reach. Drunk with the joy of singing, I forget myself and call thee friend who art my Lord." Unquote. With that, I'm happy to hand you over to Brother Abhimanyu Kaul in conversation with Brother Bishu Prushti. Have a listen, please, and a great day ahead. Jai Sai Ram.
And then when Swami came first time, I remember, that time we realized the grandeur of Bhagavan coming to hostel. He could come in any time. There were times when Bishu has come in the morning 6:30.
Oh my God! You not even had your bath.
Yeah, it's a dangerous time. You know, there were times when boys were having brush in their mouth and going from one room to another, and suddenly Welfare saw a red robe in the middle of the portico in the quadrangle. He looked at it and said, "Is it Swami?" Like he couldn't believe it. So early in the morning.
Yes.
How can he Swami be there? So he kept staring at Swami for some time. He didn't believe Swami is there. And suddenly somebody asked him, "Hey, do you also see Swami?" You know, it's like that. And then both of them screamed. And the whole hostel came running and Swami went.
Oh.
And then in the evening, in the portico, Swami was ragging every boy. He said, "You fellow, at 6:30 you're doing brush. You're supposed to get up at 5 o'clock. You are taking bath. How do you walk? You don't even look here and there." So, you know, Swami was joking and telling everybody how they were. So it was so kind of embarrassing but challenging to, my God, Swami can be here anytime.
Wow.
It is though that was a time, you know. He could just walk in. But when he comes formally, then the hostel would be decorated.
Yes.
All the floors will be washed. All the rooms will be done. Especially the A floor rooms. Because we cannot presume that Swami will go straight from entrance to the dining hall.
Yeah.
That presumption is not applicable.
Yes.
So all sides are open for him.
Yes.
He can take the stairs, he can take left, he can take right. So everything should be open.
Yes.
So we were strategically, we'll place ourselves, because in case he comes this way, then we'll open these doors and he can walk into. So usually he will take the side and he will go through rooms.
Yes.
He'll cross, he'll enter from here, exit from there, and like that he'll keep watching. So all the rooms had to be cleaned.
Rooms also have to be cleaned.
Every time. In fact, if the boys learn that stories, I'm sure it will change their lifestyle. Every room Swami has gone. And he would check. I'll tell you a nice story. It happened one day. We were leaving the mandir in the morning. Sunday, I think it was Sunday. Darshan was over. Suddenly Swami opened the door and he came out. So there was a kind of a hustle that Swami is still out. Swami said, "Run, I'm coming."
Oh.
And he went inside. And you can imagine the stampede from there. So we all are running from mandir now that Swami is coming. And by the time we are leaving the mandir, we saw Swami's car being turned in the portico. So we understood their car is out, then he's out.
He's out, yes.
Oh my God. You cannot imagine, Vishu, how we are running like mad people.
And Usain Bolt.
And on the way we are screaming at everybody, Swami is coming, Swami is coming. So whosoever is hearing, they are running.
Running, yes.
And he came. And the funny part is, he overtook us when we were close to institute.
Yes.
He overtook us. And while overtaking, he said, "Okay, 5 minutes, I'm going to Gokulam." He did like that, 5 minutes, he showed us by sign.
Get ready.
Get ready. And we ran. And my room was like an A floor, the first room on the right side.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be ready. In those rooms, we have to be always ready. Even other rooms can take relaxation, those rooms cannot.
Yes.
So when I reached home, I was a room leader at that room. I said, "Boys, man, fast." So somebody has picked up broom, somebody is picking up something. You know, we are all fast. But Swami's car had already moved.
Yes.
So we know that Swami can come any second. Any so there is no time to do anything. So one boy got a brilliant idea. He said, "Abhi, we don't have time to hide anything. Like what we'll do, we'll just sweep it behind your room." So what happens, like, you know, if you recall, Bishu, we have a long rooms, right?
Yes.
We have one entrance on either side of the room.
Yes.
And one cupboard is right side of the entrance. So one is a corner cupboard.
Yes.
So what he brilliant thought he got, he said, "Swami will enter from here. So 99% time he won't look there."
Yeah, he won't look to that.
Look left. the right side.
Okay, right, yeah.
He'll immediately enter and take a left turn to go out of the room, right?
Yes.
So he said, "Why don't we hide all the dirt on the corner of your cupboard?" I said, "That's fine. That's a good idea. Dump it. So quick sweeping was done. All the shoes which we could not be organized well, they were dumped in the corner. Another boy got an idea. He said, "Hey, in case he looks that side, so what do you do? We have a white sheet." He brought the white sheet and it taped it on top.
Oh, taped it.
Taped it. So you can see the corner, it is looking neat.
Yes.
The whole room is neat and clean.
Yes.
In the corner, there is a small little dust
and
some shoes which we are not being able to manage in the hurry.
Mm.
And on top is a white sheet, so you can't even see it.
What it is, yeah.
Practically, you can't see. And the chairs are kept in the front, so it is well hidden in that way. And we are ready. But we had no other time to think. Swami came. As soon as this taping was done, Swami was almost walking in the hostel.
Oh God.
So there was, you can imagine the Sai Gita's trumpet is going on. So there's a lot of confusion. You know, there's already a confusion is going on. There's no time to strategically plan anything. So that tape was done, Sai Gita was shouting and Swami was in. Right at the same time. And as soon as we just finished, we pulled the door open. And Swami entered. So I was trying to be a little extra smart, you know. I opened the door for Swami and I kind of gestured with my hand that Swami this way. So that he can just take the left turn and walk. Because we have a nice altar to showcase Swami.
Yes.
That was nice. Swami must have taken 3 steps. He stopped. He turned back and he walked to the corner.
Oh my God.
He walked to the corner and lifted that white cloth slowly.
Oh no.
And he did.
Oh my God.
And he walked out. We were there to laugh, whether to cry. But we are admiring Swami. That, oh God, Swami, you had that the whole room which was neat and clean. Why you had to go to that corner? But it was fun. You know, it was like he showed us in that glimpse. See, that's why Vishnu, when I told you in the beginning, we don't know when he became God.
Yeah.
Because all this was such a prank.
Yes.
But when you consolidate this thought, then you realize that every step he was showing that he was not ordinary.
Yes.
The omnipresence of God. The omniscience of God.
Exactly. Don't ever try to be smart with God.
But that concept of God,
yes.
See, no longer is theory.
Yeah.
For us, it is not like, what is God? God is omniscient.
Yeah.
We know what omniscience means.
Yes.
Because He can know even my thought before it comes to my head.
Yes.
Imagine the power. And we have kind of lived that. So for us, it was like, hey, you can't hide, man. You know, it's like that.
Yeah, you just know it. No, I think just that one incident is enough to instill in everyone that there is nothing that you can hide from Bhagwan.
You can't hide. We used to get initial years, I'll tell you, his instructions were very tough. By the time 90s came, he had become very relaxed, lenient. In our time, can you believe, Bishu, he expected boys to walk from hostel to mandir without looking at the side. He used to scold, what is your business to look at shops?
Don't look anywhere else.
So one boy in fact raised a concern that, Swami, if I look down like that, I'll trip, I'll hit somebody. And then he himself walked to show how we should walk.
Oh.
He said, I'm not asking you to turn your head down. Then you will certainly hit somebody. He said, your head should be straight up. You have to walk body straight. But your eyes should be inclined.
Yes.
You know, it's like a 45 degrees angle like that. The inclination. With that inclination, you are seeing everything. But your focus is in front.
Wow.
See, that attentiveness of God is amazing. He walked and showed. So how do you stand? So he used to literally depict right there, this is what I am expecting you. Why should you look here and there and attract bad thoughts? So he was trying to show us that how we can live in the world and still be unaffected and become ours. Imagine a thought on the way, if you talk to each other and you have a heavy discussion, you are sure that Swami will tell you that you both were talking and the reason and the conclusion and all that. If he has to point out, he'll tell you. So even if you're having a discussion, he knows it. So, you know, there was a time when nobody, even in our subconsciously also, we never thought of hiding anything. You know, he knows it anyways. So better go and tell. Swami, you know that too. Just not have it. You know, it will start like that only.
Yes.
And if Swami raises that, that means he wants to say something about it. And you better accept it. It was so much. That's why living with God is a different experience altogether. Because then you start slowly understanding what God could mean. Otherwise, it's just a words. But for us, He made it alive. He made it so real. Today, we can at least sit back and say, yeah, we lived with God.
And that is when we learnt about life and living. Because living with God is true education. Or all the learning happened not in the classrooms, but I think just observing Bhagwan, just being in His presence.
Everything. The way He talked, the way He wiped His face, He would wrap His handkerchief in His finger and wipe it. The way He blew the fly which sat on His nose. If you observe that, I have tried it, and the fly doesn't come back. Everything was so perfect for Him. Perfect. He taught us how to breathe. How to speak from stomach.
Yes.
See, that's why it humbles me, and I get lost in my ecstasy just to think that, my dear God, You came just to teach us the basic stuff of living. You know, there is nothing like, let me teach you Ashtanga Yoga today, or let me teach you Vedanta. But in everything, He taught us everything.
Yes.
Isn't it?
But, yeah.
He taught us the highest truths.
Yes.
Through Italy. I think He made all of us best managers. We can do anything today in the world by just looking at Him, by closing. Most of my work, I do it just copying Him. I'm being honest to you. I don't take any credit. Exactly what He made me do here, I do it in the corporate. Recently I was in Panama and I did a workshop for Panama Canal people, it's a corporation. And a day before that, I had done a workshop with Balvika's teachers. So those ladies and gents were also with me in the canal workshop. So after the workshop was over, one teacher came and laughed at me. She said, "Brother, you said the same thing to them also." Same values. I said, "Is it not the same?" Truth is truth. It is just a packaging for the corporate, so they can understand. But he said, "We are teaching the same thing to our Balvika's children, and you taught them same thing to these people." They are executives and directors and all that. That is the beauty of Bhagavan. Yeah. How simple he has made life, that you can take the simple philosophy and you can run a multinational company or you can run a kindergarten. It is same philosophy running from both sides.
Absolutely. And I think that's how Swami touched a primary school boy or the prime minister of a country.
Same. Isn't it? He asked the same question to us.
Yes.
The way he responded, the way we respond, the way the elder respond is different. And the concept is same. I'll tell you, it's a wonderful learning. Every time it happens. Let me tell you a small two things. A very beautiful story which I learned from primary school kids. See, innocence is a gift.
Absolutely.
We mess it up. And I really pray longer we can remain innocent is the best thing.
Yes.
You know, a standard question which Bhagavan asks everybody. Ekaran chichau. He'll ask you, "Where are you from?" Now it happened that he'll ask the same question to us. And Hyderabad Swami, Delhi Swami, America Swami, and Swami said, "Dunnapotha, no brains." And it was happening, and suddenly the primary school kids came and sat in front of us in the portico. And after a few little bit of formality, Swami turned to us and said, "Hey boy, where are you from?" Now those boys are well trained, you know. He got up and he said, "Swami, from you, Swami." Very standard answer. See, now we know the answer, so it is very easy to repeat. But when he asks, it's not easy to respond.
Yes.
See, that conviction, either of conviction or of innocence, should be there.
Yes.
So Swami turned towards us immediately and he said, "Chudu, dunna pota. Right answer. This is right answer. And you big boys, Delhi, Bombay, Hyderabad." So we were like, Swami, they are all trained.
Yes.
Then Swami turned towards him again and he says, "Boy, where are you from?" He says, "Swami, from you. But you are not coming from me. You are coming from who gave you birth?" He says, "Swami, you." He said, "How did I give you birth? Your mother gave you birth." He said, "No, Swami. You are God and the whole creation come out of you. I am part of creation, so I am also from you." A logical answer from a fifth grader, possibly.
Mm.
And Swami said, "Chuda, very good answer."
See this.
See the logic. Because I am part of the creation, you are the creator, so we are coming from you, so I am from you. This body can be from mother. So Swami had to literally ask those kids, "Where is this body coming from?" Then he'll say, "Swami, Hyderabad." So boys are so tuned to Swami in that way. And we elders, they're not like that. So I had a friend, now we are grown up boys, sitting next to me. Swami left inside. He said, "Yeah, this is not fair, man. These kids have been taught every day.
Yes.
So they are drilled. We had nobody taught us, so how could Swami tell us? See, today I have learnt it. Now if Swami asks me, I'll also say, Swami, from you." It is just a casual conversation between him and me, in the portico itself. And I heard him, we smiled at each other, we kept quiet. After 10-15 minutes, in those days Swami used to come at around 7 o'clock for darshan and then bhajan used to be at 11 o'clock. So we had a long time and Swami would come out like 2-3 times, 2-3 interviews. So he came out and he was walking around in the front talking. He walked slowly towards us and in a very, you know, very casual, non-matter-of-fact manner, he turned towards the boy and said, "Hey, Nura, ekarun chajav?
Where do you come from?
Where do you come from?" And the boy, Swami said, he got out and said, "Hyderabad, Swami." As soon as Hyderabad came out of his mouth, he said, he just took his tongue and said, "Oh God, I made a mistake again."
Oh no.
And Swami kept smiling at him. And in those days, if you remember, we used to have small shades.
Yes.
Kulanthal was not there, but we had a small shade.
Small shades, yeah.
And monkeys used to jump on that lot.
Mm-hmm.
There are trees there and monkeys would keep
coconut
hopping. Coconut trees and monkeys would be jumping. So Swami was with his hand behind, he kept smiling and teasing him, monkey. And he pointed towards this monkey and he says, monkey mind. So Swami didn't ask him for asking where is he from. He just proved it that, dear, you can't even bluff in front of me. You know, you can't even tease. If you have to be believing, only then you can be honest to Swami. Just a small instant. He kept like, oh my God. And after that, we have tried so much to be ready for Swami to tell Swami from you. He never asked. I mean, it's like, so children have taught us so much.
Yes.
In their innocence. I'll tell you one more story. We were sitting in front of Bhagwan in the room. And you know the natural habit of boys asking something from Swami. And Swami say, hey Mirai, hey Mikawala, what do you want? Standard answers have developed now over the years for Swami, you. What do you want? Swami, you. So it was like as if it has reached a peak that Swami had to teach us a lesson. We were sitting in their room, just in front of his feet. And Bhagwan, literally like, you know, as a aim, what do you want? Swami, you, Swami. The answer came, Swami, you. He got up from his chair and he said, take me. Now imagine we are sitting like, and he said, what? Now what do we do? He asked, what do you want? We said, you. And he got up and he said, take. Now, for a split second, a thought comes, should I grab him and run, or where do I go? What do I do now? And I had no idea. And we all had to just look at him like that, and he just patted our head and he says, Pichi Wada. You know, like a childish pat he gave, you don't know what you're asking for, and he walked out. And we were all wondering, like, what happened here? And a few days later, same scenario, sitting in the mandir, portico, kids came, primary school kids came, they were standing and sitting in front, we are sitting here. And Swami was kind of standing in the middle of both of us. And that is a visual to watch. He looks at one boy. He just must be a fourth or fifth grader or whatever. Swami said, how are you boys? Swami, very good, Swami. Very happy. What do you want? And the boy got up and he said, Swami, you. And Swami turned towards him, took a one step forward and he said, take. Same thing what he had done to us. He took one step towards the child and he says, take. The boy got up and he came running to Swami and he gave him a nice hug.
Wow.
You know, I had, till today, when I think of it, he just hugged him and Swami also hugged him back. And then I realized that, imagine, we have no innocent even for that.
Yes.
He gave himself and we could not take it. But this child with innocence, he accepted it. Swami said, take me. He came and hugged him. Done.
I think that's why they said that the closest you can experience God is through the innocence of a child. And I think that is why we have seen some of the most beautiful moments of Bhagwan are the moments when he spent with the primary school kids. Because you saw Bhagwan, completely... so to say, on his own, completely that pure, without any pretense of anything.
Yeah, nothing. It was, and the children were very innocent.
And the children are like that, you know, because, see, when you are in the midst of innocence,
you become like that.
You become like that. Because it is just purity talking to purity. Yeah. It is just innocence talking to innocence. And they can laugh at each other. They can crack jokes at each other for hours. And, you know, they will throw the whole world into split.
I have seen and it would some be the greatest example, the greatest conversation with Swami and children.
Children, yeah.
One day Swami was asking somebody, do you pray? The one boy said, yes, Swami, I pray. Swami said, what do you pray? He said, Swami, I chant 108 names of yours. Swami said, do you remember? He said, yes, Swami. Swami was kind of showing expression of great awe that at that young age, you recall 108 names of Baba. He said, chant. So he folded his hand very nicely, almost closed his eyes, and he said, Om Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Babaya Namaha. Om Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Babaya Namaha. Om Bhagavan Shri. And Swami stopped him. Swami said, hey, go forward. He said, no, Swami, I only know one line. So he said, then you said 108. He said, Swami, at this line I chant 108 lines. He said, why don't you learn everything? He said, Swami, your one name is enough, Swami. I don't need more. Now, first of all, the conviction is so amazing. We're looking at his face, like, what is this kid for talking about? And he told Swami, I don't need any more, Swami. One is enough. I repeat that one name 108 times. Period. Why the hell I should need 108 names of yours? One name is enough. I caught you one name. And Swami gave him a hug right there.
I think this love dance of innocence.
So much we can learn, man. So much we can learn from these kids. I think maybe Swami allowed this happen in front of all of us to teach us that lesson. That look, God can be accessed. You don't need theories. You don't need big formulas, man.
Yes.
Innocence can attract like this.
Yes.
Imagine a child just hugging you.
I think, and that's why I think you have had saints like Ramakrishna Paramahansa who attain the divine just by being that pure self.
That pure innocent self.
That pure innocent self. And I think we have seen that so much in Swami, isn't it? If there is a new gadget or anything, the way Swami looks at it and the way Swami, you know, is
he gets excited
about it. Oh, what is it? You know, you can explain to Swami, this is a Walkman, Swami. You know, what can it do? You can explain to Swami, it can play a song, it can go forward, it can go back. You know? I mean, he allows us.
And he will take you through the whole journey.
The whole journey.
He will look at it as if really he's interested in knowing all that.
And the next second he can actually create it.
He can create it next second. He's so innocent. I'll tell you, these are some memories which are so wonderful. Cell phone was one thing. Computer pad. We asked him to inaugurate that site after alumni meet. Oh my God. He was so excited to that. You know, he showed that excitement of doing it. But next moment, he's totally detached from everything. Yes. Doesn't care for anything. One day, he created a watch and then he's struggling to put the watch on. He's trying to figure out how to put that. Oh God, Swami, you only made it. He's such a fantastic God.
Wow.
A very strange thing to say, fantastic God, but he is such a... That phenomena is sometimes hard to digest. Even to believe that we walked with him, we stayed with him, is itself heavy.
Yes. But I think, as you also said, it's time now, you know, to sit down and take every second of this and ruminate. Because today, you know, when you do that, every time you do it, you realize that you have discovered only... So little
of him.
Of it. Of that moment.
So little of that moment.
And I think when you look at your life, you are now dealing with children. And you are now dealing with innocence and purity. And I think as you strive to inculcate values in them and reflect on how Swami inculcated values in us, I think that whole process becomes so much more insightful, isn't it?
It's humbling too. Then you, at least we start appreciating the effort which has gone in building what we are today.
Yes.
Whatever little we have grasped.
Yes.
How much of effort from God has gone.
Just like they say, Swami used to say, only Nataraja knows the struggles of making you dance, teaching you every step of dance. Only Nataraja knows. So only Swami knows how much he has struggled.
And patience.
And patience.
We do funny things. We disappear. Then we come back after 5 years. And we tell, sorry Swami. He said, okay, past is past. Start again.
Yes.
So, you know, the patience of Swami, I don't think anybody can even fathom.
Yes.
The persistence of Bhagavan. He never gives you up.
I think everything that he asked us to cultivate, be it patience, be it purity, be it perseverance, only when in his physical form also he practiced it.
He did.
Everything he asked us to do, be it sealing on desires, be it talking less, be it anything, be it getting up early, be it sleeping early, be it living a disciplined life, whatever it is, I think
you are right, because I also believe it and I speak also about it, that he is one phenomena in the recorded history of mankind who has spoken on every possible topic which there can be. And he is the one phenomena who has not spoken anything what he has not practiced.
Not practiced, yes.
So practically he lived everything.
Yes.
And I think that is why he has the confidence to say, my life is my message.
Message.
You look at him from any angle, he has an answer.
Yes.
If you want to be a good son, good child, good employer, good employee, good worker, good teacher, good student, any format of life if you want to live, you can take him as a role model.
Yes.
And I sometimes tell people also that if you want to learn from Baba, then for a time being, for that moment, don't take him as God. Because the moment you call him God, you suddenly start presuming that, oh, he's God, he can do it.
Mm.
Because he's God, he opened the school.
Mm.
He opened the hospital. He did water because Swami is God.
Yeah.
That kind of liberates you that you should not do or you cannot do it. But it's not the fact, because he came to show that this is our potential.
Yes.
And he expects each one of us to live like him.
Yes.
Because whatever he did was humanly possible.
Yes.
So to learn from him, I feel, in a very humble way I'm telling, that people must, we all should do, look at him as a guide.
Yes.
As a role model.
Yes.
And then imitate him.
Yes.
And like I was telling yesterday also, you know, about the Mother Parvati and Shiva's.
Yes.
See, when you're following him, you follow him as a devotee.
Yes.
You need a time to worship.
Yes.
But then there is oneness of playfulness, of pranks and discussions and fights. All that is allowed. But you must have time also to worship him. So for God, we have to use him as a role model.
Yes.
So we can learn from him. Otherwise, avatarhood is, we are wasting that opportunity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, he led a life to only show us how we should lead our lives.
We should lead our lives.
And I think only then we have made use of this precious space that he has given us in this time frame when we are here as his contemporaries. Only then we will be able to make most of this opportunity.
See, many people will ask you, hey, your hostel life was very tough. How are you fitting into the world today? I say, look at us. almost all of us are well settled in that manner.
Yes.
And it was not that Swami didn't have money or the financial capacity or ability or willingness to give us a good room.
Yeah.
Do you think he could not have provided fans for us? He could have done it any time.
Yes.
But he chose not to, because he wanted us to live a life of simplicity.
Absolutely.
He was so proud that my children sleep on the floor, they have no fans, they live a simple life. He would bring people from Himalayas and everybody and then showcase that, look, you guys live in caves, my children also live in cave. Only modern building I made on top, inside they live very simple life.
Very simple life, simple living, high thinking.
And this is exactly what he himself used to live.
He himself used to live, yes.
In a 10 by 10 room, our master has lived over 45 years.
Yes.
With a simple bed and a fan.
That's it.
At this age today, I feel we should have air condition and, you know, Swami, at least now we are growing old, we need it. But when I look back, when we were joining the school, he was almost 60, man.
Yeah.
So we have made a 60-year-old person run with us.
Yeah.
Climb stairs with us. And if he did not do it, we used to cry and make scene out of it that, Swami, why can't you come? Today, even we have not yet reached 60, we are in 40s, and we have leg problem, we have this problem, and we want to have a meeting, let's have it in the ground floor. And Swami used to say, Swami, please, sea floor is my room, please come.
Yes.
And Swami would come to the sea floor.
Yes.
He would climb the mountains.
Yes.
So imagine at the physical level, you are showing us, if you live a life of neatness, purity, you will have that strength.
Yes. Purity gives you all the strength.
All the strength.
I mean, because the human body is itself so magnificently gifted with so many faculties that if you just maintain the body and if you are pure, then these maladies will not touch you. And you'll have like infinite reservoirs of energy. And I think we can go on talking about maybe the next time we meet, we should go on to discuss about your days in the university, you know, the days between 1985 and 1990, you were doing your bachelor's and a lot of things were happening in the university. During that period, Swami started the MBA program. Yes, and you were doing a master's in commerce, and you were there as a witness. Yeah, you were part of that program. And later on, I think that is what you took with you when you left the portals, and how it was when you had to leave the portals. You should share all those
stories.
That
is a different storyline. We need more time.
Yeah. I pray to Bhagwan that, you know, we'll continue this discussion. And document these and relive these moments so that it re-energizes us to walk on the path of purity, patience and perseverance that He has so diligently given us and propelling us every moment to walk on. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brother. Sairam.
Sairam.
Tune in to Sight. Spend the day with Sight. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sight Thursday Live.
Radio Sight Thursday Live.
एक ओंकार सतनाम करता पूरक निरपार निर्वैर अकाल मूर्त अजोनी सैभं गुरु प्रसाद जप आद सच जुगाद सच है भी सच नानक होसी भी सच
Vaheguru, Vaheguru, Vaheguru ji bolo. Vaheguru, Vaheguru, Vaheguru ji bolo. Satnam, Satnam, Satnam ji bolo. Satnam, Satnam, Satnam ji bolo.
Nit nit japiye tere naam ji bolo.
Nit nit japiye tere naam ji bolo.
Satnam, Satnam, Satnam ji bolo.
Satnam, Satnam, Satnam ji bolo.
Ram, Ram, Ram.
Thank you.
భజనలు చేసి భక్తి శ్రద్ధలతో మంగళములు చేసి వారములని విని మంగళములు పడి జయ హరతి మంగళహారతి నిత్యహారతి మంగళములు పడి జయ హరతి
तेरी तेरी दाय सी जो तुम तोड़ो पिया मैं नानी तोड़ो रे तो से प्रीत तोड़े कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ो कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ो
முரளி மனோகர் மோகன கிரிதர் 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 முரளி மனோகர் மோகன கிரிதர்
மீரா கே பிரபு பிரிஜ கே வாசி गिरिधर हो गिरिधर हो गिरिधर हो मीरा के प्रभु गिरिधर गिरिधर
मीरा के प्रभु गिरिधर गिरिधर
मीरा के प्रभु
Okay. उंगली पकड़ के चलना सिखलाया।
जीना है क्या इसका मतलब बतलाया। दो न जाना कभी तुम